And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with me today, Cindy Messerly. She is the Chief Executive Officer for the Lupus Foundation of America, the Philadelphia Tri-State Chapter, and welcome back.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
Oh, gosh, it seems like we only see you when we got something to talk about. And we
Well, that's a good time to be seen.
Yeah, that is. That is, because you got the you have the Lupus Walk, and the Lupus Luke and Walk to End Lupus Now in Philly coming up, and the Walk to End Lupus Now in Wilmington coming up, actually,
yes,
in October and in November, respectively. So we're going to talk about that. But we always start off with, let's have a discussion about what is lupus.
Lupus is a chronic autoimmune disease of inflammation. There is no cure. There's no known cause. And what happens is your immune system thinks that it's an overactive immune system. And so your immune system thinks that your healthy organs are actually invaders. So much like your immune system would kick in to take care of a virus or an infection or something that's really wrong in your body, it attacks those wrong cells and things and makes them go away. Your immune system actually thinks that various organs or any part organ throughout your body can be affected. Think that it's an invader. It thinks it's wrong, and it starts to attack it, causing inflammation, which ultimately leads to organ damage and then ultimately organ failure, which is what we try to prevent.
Who is affected by lupus? Is this something that anybody or everybody can get, or do you see that some populations are more likely to get it?
Definitely. Anybody could get lupus, that's for sure. But we definitely see 90% of those affected are women. And you're 2 to 3 times more likely to be a woman of color. And we definitely see a disproportionate effect on Black, Asian, African American, Hispanic, Latino. And so it really makes us stand up and say, okay, why is that happening? We just don't know why that happens yet. But it's leading towards there could potentially be a socioeconomic issue around it as well.
Really?
Yeah, so we're talking about health disparities. And so when it comes to lack of care or potentially people not paying attention to what's going on and all aspects of that, where there's trauma included. So it's an area that they're looking more heavily at from a research standpoint.
Wow, trauma. So you don't know what could trigger or what may cause some one person to have lupus?
No, we don't know exactly what causes lupus and what causes it to be in a state of a flare that would actually lead to a diagnosis. But we do believe there's 3 factors involved: genetics, a family history, the environment, which could be your socioeconomic, your living situation. It could be what you're exposed to, a virus. It could be something like that. Or it could be hormonal, which leads us to the fact that 90% are women, and typical age of diagnosis is between the ages of 15 and 44, so childbearing years. And so that's where we believe hormones come into play.
Huh. But yet men can be diagnosed with lupus.
Men and children, yeah. So men and children, 10% of those diagnosed are men, and children are typically diagnosed. And we say children would be less than age of 15. In that 10 to 20% of time, children are diagnosed.
Well, here's where we have the long discussion about diagnosis, because vague symptoms, it could be intestinal for somebody. Somebody else may have lung issues. I mean, and when you get into socioeconomic again, if you're not treated during that flare up.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a disease of flare and remission. And so let's talk diagnosis first. So it takes on average 6 years to be diagnosed correctly. There's so many occasions of misdiagnosis, just really not treating any of the symptoms. The symptoms are so varied and mimic so many other types of diseases that they often either go overlooked or treated individually and aren't looked together as collectively as being towards one goal of diagnosing lupus. There are symptoms range at literally anything from your head to your toe. Common symptoms are extreme fatigue. And I mean Benadryl tired. Somebody described it to me once. I don't live with lupus. They described it to me once as Benadryl tired. Well, you wave a Benadryl under my nose and I'm out for hours. And so I understood that. It's such chronic fatigue that you've slept for 8 or 9 hours and you just can't get out of bed. Joint pain is another really common one and well-known one. One of the more outward-facing is a butterfly rash on your face, so a skin rash, which is a telltale sign of lupus. Low-grade fever. So you're hearing these things, and they could all relate to so many other things. Often Lyme's disease is the first thing people go to, fibromyalgia, arthritis. And it doesn't mean that there's not a comorbidity of something else or developing into something else. But it really takes someone to see all of the symptoms that are going on and a physician to say, all right, really, let's take a look at how we diagnose this and what does that look like. There's no one test for lupus, which is the other challenging thing. We look at your symptoms, your family history. Is there a history of lupus in the family? Or possible other autoimmune diseases, because when many people with autoimmune diseases don't just have one, they have multiples. And so your physician will look at all of those things. And by the way, it's a rheumatologist that typically diagnosed lupus. That doesn't mean to say that your primary care physician or other physician may not see the signs and say, I think you have lupus, and send you to a rheumatologist, but your rheumatologist would be the primary caretaker of someone living with lupus as far as your physician is concerned.
Well, a lot of these sound like arthritis, too.
Totally.
Arthritis, which,
yes.
Again, isn't that also an autoimmune disease?
It is. Absolutely, it is. And so, like I said, many people will say, they finally get diagnosed and they go, I told you I'm not crazy. I've been living with these things all my life. I was always sick as a kid, or I was always getting injured. I always had these pain. I was always out of school for a fever. Various things, but it literally can affect you from migraines to your eyesight to joint pain. Raynaud's syndrome is a very common, which is when you have poor circulations in your hands and your feet, so your hands and feet and toes get very cold.
Now, does someone with lupus and say it's Raynaud's disease, so could you go your entire life without being diagnosed with this? Are some cases so moderate or with so few flare-ups that you don't even realize you've had it?
I suspect that that is the case, that there are many people still living with lupus who are undiagnosed. And like you said, it is a disease of flares and remission. So if they don't go into such an extreme flare or aren't seeking the care because their symptoms have gotten so bad, or they're treating symptoms one-off and potentially seeing and different doctor for everything, and nobody's putting the puzzle together. And so, yes, somebody could be living with it, which is why programs like this are so important to help raise awareness about it. And so if you know somebody who's experiencing some of these symptoms, then you need to tell them, get to a doctor, start asking some questions.
Well, with 90% women, so you present one day with, you have aching joints. But maybe you're in the following year and it's fatigue or it's a low-grade fever and you're a woman. Is that part of the reason why it takes 6 years for a diagnosis, that they don't put the pieces together, or it's just dismissed as a hormonal woman?
Certainly all of the above, right? So, and that's one of the challenges, and it's one of the things that we profess so much about being your own advocate and how important that is in healthcare in general for women, is being your own advocate. When you're experiencing something, you know your body, and it really, no one else knows your body. Somebody used the phrase the other day, I have a degree in me. And I thought, oh my gosh, we all have a degree in me. That is amazing. And we have to be pushing to get the answers. And if you really do believe that something is wrong, find a different physician, seek alternative answers, and don't stop until you do get the right answer. Now, there's a fine line of living in a gray area of not being diagnosed with lupus. You may have one of the tests that they use to direct towards a diagnosis. It does not by any means is an ANA test. It's a blood test, and it's an anti-nuclear antibody. And when you have a positive ANA, that doesn't mean that you have lupus. It means that your doctor is going to say, let's order some more tests. We think there might be something related to autoimmune going on. So it guides them in the right direction, and they'll start looking at some other factors. And depending on your symptoms, there may be a biopsy involved. There may be some other things involved that they do from a testing standpoint. But it really starts with putting your symptoms together.
Well, if you can go up to 6 years, and I'm going to guess that the average is skewed because people of color, women of color, are in that pool of diagnosis. What are the ramifications of not being diagnosed?
Organ failure and death, ultimately. I mean, lupus is something you can live a very active, healthy life with when it's treated properly and you manage your, it's all about managing your symptoms and managing the inflammation, keeping the inflammation down. That's the factor. It's if your organs become inflamed, damage happens and ultimately failure. And that's what leads to severe complications, such as whether you have lupus nephritis, which is lupus in your kidneys, and leads to a kidney transplant, or kidney failure, ultimately onto a transplant. So there's so many different levels of lupus, whether you're living with very moderate to mild symptoms, to extreme and severe symptoms, which can lead to death.
And does this lead you open to other illnesses during COVID especially, or would a routine illness knock you out more?
It certainly could. Part of that depends on, if you think about, lupus is an overactive immune system. So the treatment is to suppress or calm or redirect the immune system. So depending on your treatment, which can be anything from steroid treatment to if you're in an extreme flare, steroids are a very effective use, but of course, long term, we all know what steroids do to our bodies long term. So, depending on the type of treatment, immunosuppressives. If you're in extreme case, chemotherapy is often used to suppress the immune system. Again, to quiet down the immune system to stop the attack on your body. We've been fortunate over the last couple of years to have some new treatments that have come into the realm, and so that has. The goal there being to reduce steroid treatment and offer alternative therapies that are not maybe so hard on the body as steroids are.
Hey, let's break now. If you're just joining us, this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with me today, Cindy Messerly, the Chief Executive Officer for the Lupus Foundation of America, Philadelphia Tri-State Chapter. And you can find out more information about what we are talking about today by going to their website, lupustristate.org. That's lupustristate, all one word, .org. Follow them on social media. You'll find out what's going on more quickly. You'll also learn more about their events coming up, the Lupus Loop and Walk to End Lupus Now in Philadelphia on October 30th, and the Walk to End Lupus Now in Wilmington on November 13th. Just follow them on social media at Lupus Tri-State. Let's talk about, well, one, the treatments, et cetera, but what is the work of the Lupus Foundation?
Who are we?
History, well, all of that.
We have been around since the early 1970s and started by families who were affected by lupus, and our organization has grown from there. As the Philadelphia Tri-State Chapter, we serve all of Pennsylvania, South Jersey, and Delaware. And so our mission is fourfold. Our ultimate goal is a life free of lupus. But our mission is to improve the quality of life for all those affected by lupus. And we do that through four pillars of our mission, through education, support, advocacy, and research. And here we're an affiliate of our national office. We have a national office located in Washington, D.C. But our main focus here in the tri-state region is, I would say, 80% of our time is spent on education and support. So we work directly with the lupus community to help them learn how to live their best life while living with lupus, because it is challenging. It's a challenging disease to understand, to learn about. It can change every day in your body. You could wake up one day where it hadn't affected, let's say, your heart before, and suddenly now your heart is affected by lupus, and it can change that quickly. So understanding how lupus and what triggers your own lupus is really important. So we really try to help people learn about that and support them through that process.
When you say trigger their lupus, is that the initial diagnosis where you have symptoms that can be identified? Or is it when you are functioning, living with lupus, and then suddenly something will trigger a relapse or major flare-up?
Exactly. And that's really what I'm referring to. So often some of those same triggers will likely be things that caused you to get diagnosed. So if you had symptoms, ongoing symptoms, but they were never severe enough to get you to a diagnosis, or in some cases to get you to react to them, right, to get them treated, but which are often the same things that will trigger a flare. So when you're diagnosed, it's probably more of a flare situation, and it gets you into a more stable situation. excuse me. And then as you go on, you may have flares along the way. There may be different things. It may be, in some cases, it could be food related things for people. It could be high inflammatory food. So we might recommend there is no lupus diet. But for some people, maybe being gluten free is helpful to them. For others who may be very photosensitive, because lupus can make you, your skin and the sun actually can cause a flare. So you can be very, very sensitive to the sun and any kind of UV rays. And so maybe going in the sun can cause you a flare. So you figure those things out as time goes on, because you'll go, what did I just do to cause this? Why am I down for the count? Why do I feel so horrible and in a flare state? But when you manage those things, you can put lupus into remission, which is a very low disease activity state. That doesn't mean necessarily that you're off all medications, but it means that your symptoms are really well controlled. And so that's quite attainable for many people. If you're in an extreme state, maybe not so much.
Well, let's talk about the research pillar then. New medications. I remember COVID really hit you very hard at the very beginning because of a shared medication. Well, not
did.
So shared, but
it did. We had back in early 2020, early COVID, when Plaquenil, which is one of the cornerstone medications for the treatment of lupus, was touted as a possible treatment for COVID. And so we were into a very extreme shortage situation, which fortunately manufacturers stepped up, resolved the situation. It turned out that Plaquenil was not one of the cures for COVID, as we all now know. But yeah, over the last, I would say, 18, 24 months, there have been incredible breakthroughs in the research field for treatments of lupus specifically from the drug manufacturers. The research, which has taken so much time, and as we all know, research takes a lot of time and money. And when two new drugs and one new treatment for an existing drug, or indication, I should say, one new indication for existing drug happen all within 18, 24 months, it really is a hopeful time. So in late 2020 into early 2021, we had a new indication for lupus nephritis for the use of an existing treatment. And through 2021, we had two new drugs, one for a brand new drug for the treatment of lupus nephritis and one for the overall treatment of lupus. So it really is an exciting time, and there's lots of hope to be able to have options for treatments. That's still not a lot. When you think about, there's only been three drugs approved by the FDA specifically for the treatment of lupus. We have other treatments, but these were developed specifically for the treatment of lupus. Compared to so many other diseases which have multiple treatments, it's giving people options, and that's what, because not everybody can take every drug.
What about your advocacy work then? How do you focus that? Is it on, an increased awareness, obviously, that's the education pillar of this, but in advocacy, what are you striving to do?
So a couple different aspects. The advocacy from a federal standpoint, we work with our national office and try to raise awareness around the need for research dollars and increased research dollars for lupus and the number of people affected and how severely people's lives have been changed and affected by lupus. So we also do that at the local level of also some funding, because we are funded by the state departments of health. But also, again, from an awareness, from an educational standpoint, to raise awareness with our legislators to see how severely our communities are affected and to partner with our legislators to help raise that awareness, especially in those communities of high risk.
Oh, high risk.
So our Latino Hispanic communities and our African American communities, and specifically in that age demographic of women 15 to 44.
Now, living with lupus, this is a devastating diagnosis if you do have the severe forms, and it impacts your, not just your daily life, but economically. Mm-hmm. This is a costly disease.
It really is. It can cost anywhere from $20,000 to $25,000 a year. And if you have lupus nephritis, which is lupus in your kidneys, double, possibly triple that in a year's time.
And so for that reason alone, advocacy work towards insurance, disability status.
Absolutely. Yep. Many people living with lupus are unable to work. They're unable to work or only able to work part-time. They're limited in what they can do. I will say that COVID, I think, has been helpful for the lupus community from an employment standpoint because of the remote work now that so many people are doing and advocating for and flexible hours, which have become so important through COVID. So I do think that not just for lupus community, but for anybody dealing with any kind of disability and or needing any type of work accommodations, it has been really impactful for and hopefully life-changing, because I do believe that a lot of things have changed permanently as we go back into our what we're still not out of COVID, but whatever that looks like going forward, they've been some significant changes.
Well, then let's talk then about how can we get involved. You do have support programs. Do you look for volunteers? Do you look for peers to join in and jump in here?
Yeah.
This is your time.
So how to get involved? As you mentioned, we have the two walks coming up, one in Philadelphia on October 30th. And which is at Memorial Hall. We'd love for people to come out. Whether you want to participate and walk, that one happens to be a 5K as well. You can participate, walk to support the lupus community. You come out to a 5K race and run and hopefully win. But you can also come out and volunteer. We desperately need volunteers to help any of our events. Then we have the walk in Wilmington at Tubman Garrett Park on November 13th. Again, the same, come out and walk with us and join the lupus community. And we utilize these walks to raise funds as well. So that's an important part of our mission. And as a nonprofit, we do all of our revenue comes from fundraising and donations by our amazing community and support system of the lupus community. So, but volunteers are desperately needed. We're a small staff of five people. And so we live and breathe by our volunteer work. So whether you're a support group leader and someone living with lupus and looking to support others living with lupus in that type of fashion, or you're a volunteer at a walk or a fundraiser event, we are so grateful for everyone's help. So if you've got some time on your hands and you'd like to volunteer, please give us a call. Check out our website, and we'd love to hear from you.
What happens at the Lupus Loop and the Walk to End Lupus now? Is this one of those big fun events and everybody comes out?
Lots of stuff happening at the walks. They're both a little bit different just by nature of the location that they take place in. And we have volunteer walk committees who help put each of these walks together. But we like to have entertainment. There'll be lots of vendors on site and information about lupus that people can learn about, of course. And but just lots of fun and energy. And really, it's about bringing this community together to support one another and to help find a cure. That's our main goal.
Is peer-to-peer support or a conversation really vital in a situation like this where there isn't a lot of facts that you can refer to? Everyone is such an individual.
It really is. And we find that more and more people are, when you're living with lupus, can be very isolated. And because many people don't understand the fatigue, the chronic pain, the having to cancel things because you can't, having to manage your life a little bit more significantly than you did before lupus, and things changed. Many family and friends don't understand that. So being able to have a community of people that understand what you're going through and maybe can help guide one another through that, or I've experienced it this way, maybe explaining this to your family members might help, or having a schedule to help manage not having to cancel everything might help you. So there's definitely strong connections within the lupus community of having that peer-to-peer support and understanding with each other.
Is that part then of the mission there? Is that part of the support aspect?
It is. It totally is. We have support groups throughout the region and happening, all still happening virtually. So really anyone can join into any group at any time that works for them. And they're led by peers who are living with lupus and understand, and they're really just facilitating a conversation. They're not meant to be therapy sessions by any means. We're there as guiding, and certainly not the experts on everything because they're your peers, but they're meant to be a group to allow you to feel safe to share, that people will understand what you're going through and kind of have your back the whole time you're doing it.
And offering tips and how
yes,
they are handling.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. When we go to your website, lupustristate.org, obviously we can find out more information about the upcoming events. Again, Lupus Loop and Walk to End Lupus now at Memorial Hall in Philadelphia on October 30th, and then November 13th at Tubman Garrett Park, the Walk to End Lupus Now in Wilmington. You can find out more information about that there. Register,
yes. Volunteer.
But what else do we find at your website?
So you'll find all kinds of educational information as well. We want to be the trusted resource for lupus information. And so our National Resource Center on Lupus is a great place to go and find that. You'll also find information on upcoming educational programs that we've got. We do monthly programs that are open up, that are free. Everything that we offer is free at this point. And you'll also find COVID has also allowed us, because of Zoom and moving everything to a digital environment, we now have this amazing digital library of resources as well. So you can view previously scheduled and recorded programs. So if somebody reaches out to us and says, hey, I have lupus, I'm a 28-year-old, I want to get pregnant, but I'm concerned, we have a lot of resources that we can direct them to, and really anything else. So that's been a tremendous resource for us.
Well, you know what? It is the two-minute warning, the takeaway from today's conversation.
So I would love for people, if you're experiencing any type of symptom that you think could be related to lupus, fatigue, odd symptoms, hair loss, rash, photosensitivity, take a look at the symptoms, the whole list of symptoms for lupus, and be your own advocate. Really get to the doctor, explain what's going on. But I think the biggest thing is tell them everything that's going on. Sometimes we think, oh, that was no big deal, I had that a week ago and now it's gone. But make sure that you're telling them everything. Be your own advocate, I think, is the biggest takeaway.
The degree in me,
absolutely.
And again, recap, why should we reach out to
to the lupustristate.org. We'd love to hear from you. So join our walks. We've got the walk on October 30th at Memorial Hall, Lupus Loop. It's a 5K race and walk. And we've got the walk on November 13th at Tubman Garrett Park in Wilmington, Delaware. We'd love to see you. Come out, join us. Give us a call, volunteer. We desperately need volunteers, so we would love to have you.
And, of course, you find out how to volunteer, how to make a donation, how to join teams.
Join teams, start a team. Absolutely.
Okay, and walk as an individual, too.
Yes.
Or run as an individual in Philadelphia. Okay, all of that at lupustristate.org. That's lupustristate.org. Follow them on social media at lupustristate. Again, for more information about absolutely everything that we have talked about today for the Lupus Foundation of America and the Philadelphia Tri-State Chapter and their work in education, support, advocacy, and research. Again, lupustristate.org. My guest today, the Chief Executive Officer, Cindy Messerly, and thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Well, see you again soon. And we'll see you on October 30th in Philadelphia at Memorial Hall and in Wilmington at Tubman Garrett Park on November 13th. Walk to End Lupus Now. Again, more information, lupustristate.org. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.